For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Tharp Show, 3:31 on a very pleasant Tuesday afternoon.
So far, yes,
I was about to say, I think you could call it the calm before the storm. We've got the television on in the studio, and I should be asking you, Stel. I saw the maps there, and I saw a lot of red and yellow, and
most of it's south of here. Yes.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately that's where I'm flying tomorrow, south of here. So, again, welcome into the show. My partner Tim Jones is out today and tomorrow. He is in Washington, D.C. at the annual ALEC Legislative Conference. We talked a little bit about that yesterday. And joining us is Paul Kirtman from the Paul Kirtman Show, Saturdays from 9 to noon. Paul, how are you?
12 to noon.
12 to noon. Oh.
No. 12 to 1. Sorry, 12 is noon.
I expanded your show.
Yeah, you did.
9 to 12, right? You know, you get out here a little earlier and you get an extra.
I just went from a 1-hour show to a 3-hour show on Saturday morning.
And you get out of here an hour earlier. So, wow, you can't beat that. Stel, how are you?
Doing fine, buddy.
Good. Boy, we got a lot to talk about today, of course. Paul, I want to talk to you first. You know, you're our economic financial guy. And it looks like that the United States, our government, or our country, has averted a major rail strike that could be happening next week. This agreement was supposedly hammered out in September, but some of the labor unions weren't on board with it. Didn't look like it was going to pass, so they're going to impose, basically, Congress is going to impose this agreement on the workers. What do you think, sir?
I'm wondering exactly what does that mean? They're going to impose it on the workers. Like, it's just the deal that they're going to get and they can take it or leave it?
Exactly. Okay. I think they tried to do the bargaining thing, union and management. And apparently because, freight is such an important part of our economy that the government has the right to basically impose a settlement on them.
You know, that makes a lot of sense because if that goes down, everything else shuts down and people start fighting for different stuff. Reagan, wasn't it Reagan when the air traffic controllers were going to strike? He said, well, don't strike or you're all fired.
Yeah.
And I guess that's kind of an imposition.
And, I was around. People, a lot of people say that was really the defining moment of the young Reagan administration when he took that action of firing the air traffic controllers.
Yeah, I would agree. That was an interesting time. Looking back on it, now that you mention it, that was very interesting, the confrontation that existed then. Yes.
A lot of people, Reagan was 40 years ago, of course, but what a transformative presidency, besides the fact that we had the longest peacetime expansion and all of that. But look what he did, first of all, to bring back confidence to America. We had lost it after Jimmy Carter and the Iran-Contra situation. But look at the strong actions that he took regarding the air traffic controllers. Look at the strong actions that he took against the Soviet Union at the time, that we were going to go head to head with them, that we weren't afraid with them, we were going to outspend them, we weren't afraid of them. And a lot of those things at that time, people were like, oh, this is Cowboy Reagan, he's going to get us into a war. But it all turned out for the best.
Yeah, thank goodness. I hope this all turns out for the best.
I do, too. You know, a lot of people, when we were talking the other day, that Donald Trump has a similar kind of vein with Ronald Reagan, that he brought kind of a spirit back to the United States of our best days are not over yet, a strong leader. You know, I will give Donald Trump, he was Reagan-esque in that respect.
He was. With Donald Trump, and also if he said he was going to be doing something, you could just count on him to do it.
Yeah.
That's how you could, that's what I always got from Donald Trump, and I kind of feel the same way about Ronald Reagan. Like, if he says this is one of the things that we're going to move on, this is the agenda, this is something we got to get done, it's so refreshing when you have a president who's actually doing what they're saying they're going to do rather than just constantly, gaming the media or the people.
And that doesn't happen very often. During last week, during the holiday, Paul, there was a little kerfuffle at Mar-a-Lago that Nick Fuentes and Kanye West, or Ye, as he is known now, made a trip to Mar-a-Lago. That controversy still has not died down a little bit. People are talking about it. There are some of the Republican politicians and leadership are starting to come out and say this wasn't a very good idea. And some of them are Trump allies. I mean, is this something that is going to go away in a few days, or do you think this is something that could potentially linger?
I think it's something that could potentially linger, but let me just also say this. I don't know anything about Nick Fuentes. Like, I hear about him all the time, right. But all I know is this. Trump had dinner with a white supremacist. That word has been so overused. It's been used with people that clearly aren't. They use it with Donald Trump all the time. So at this point, by them saying that about Nick Fuentes, I don't know anything about the guy, but you can say that about him, and I still don't know if it's true just because that word is so way overused. So it'll probably linger, though, because they want to keep using that word and tying it and trying to find a way to a path to get it tied to Donald Trump.
What if they have video and writings of his where he is talking about anti-Holocaust, that there was not denying the Holocaust and, you know, saying he is a which is weird to me that he calls himself a white nationalist because his father
calls himself a white nationalist.
He calls himself a white nationalist.
Okay. While, well, that kind of settles it.
While and it's but your father's Hispanic. You're not, you know, you have blood that supposedly white nationalists don't like. That's the curious thing with him.
So does he call himself a white supremacist or a white nationalist?
A white nationalist.
And is there a difference?
I don't know. That's what do you think?
I feel like there is a difference between a white nationalist and I feel like a white supremacist is somebody who is clearly a racist. Like anybody with a different skin tone, they're worth less, right? Mm-hmm. But a white nationalist, how does being white play into being a nationalist? Is it really the same thing, or is there a different nuance to
it? Is white nationalist the cleaned up version of a white supremacist?
Is it white supremacy 2022?
I'm just asking questions here, Paul.
I'm asking questions too, because I don't have any idea.
Hey, before we get to our first break, let's take a call from John. He wants to talk about the railroad strike. John, how are you? Welcome to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show.
I'm doing fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Back about 66, I was working on the Santa Fe Railroad as a laborer. We tried to go on strike because we were making half as much per hour as the people on an assembly line and all around the Kansas City area. And President Johnson came in. He shut us down, and we were only on strike for like 2 days.
Hmm.
We got basically maybe 10 cents an hour more. That was it.
And John, it's my understanding in this contract that it's not so much a question of wages. I think they're getting 24% increase in wages. It's a matter of sick time that because there's been a shortage of workers, that a lot of these guys have been working a lot of mandatory overtime. And I think the company was making them take sick leave if they had to do, you know, something that they wanted to take off or something. And that was seemed to be the biggest sticking issue. It's not money.
Yeah. Now, what we had back then, they gave us some health insurance for Santa Fe Railroad, but you had to use Santa Fe doctors. You had to go to the hospital in Topeka, Kansas. And if you went to any other doctor, you paid full price.
Mm-hmm. So, what's your opinion? Should these guys, I know that you tried to do it and they wouldn't let you back in the 60s. Should these guys be able to strike?
Well, I think they ought to be able to do that. Everybody else has been able to do it to try to get a little better working conditions. But I was really disappointed. We even had guys that quit the Santa Fe Railroad and went to work for Boeing when they were in Wichita. And they stayed there about 3 months, and then Boeing laid them all off, and they lost their jobs. And then they tried to come back to Santa Fe Railroad, and some of them couldn't make it back because somebody else got in there, too. So it was some rough times back then.
Yeah. John, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. Boy, just imagine, though, if there would have been a railroad strike, and then, you know, they don't talk about it much anymore, but our diesel fuel supplies are still supposed to be incredibly low, which trains and trucks run on. I mean, we're heading for a
we are skimming the surface of normalcy right now.
We are. Hey, we'd like to take more of your calls when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Sarf Show. 314-912-1019. Just a heads up, we don't have a lot of guests today. So would love to hear your thoughts on the railroad strike. Would love to hear your thoughts on Kanye West, Ye, and Nick Fuentes and that situation. And a topic that I'm going to get into with Paul later is the Defense of Marriage Act. I think that's what they're calling it. It's looking like that's going to pass tomorrow with 12 Republican senators adding on to that, which our own Senator Blunt was one of them. Looks like that's going to be a done deal. We'll get Paul's thoughts on that and get your thoughts when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Sarf Show on 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sarf Show. Tim is out today with Paul Kirkman from the Paul Kirkman Show. Noon to 1 p.m. every Saturday is filling in with us today.
And throwing stuff around
the studio. You know, that sounds really, when you knock that water over, it sounds really loud in headphones. It's like, oh, what happened?
That was my headphones.
Oh, was it?
My headphones literally fell off the top of my head.
Oh, okay.
So,
speaking of that, just to digress for a second, you ever gotten like scratches on yourself and you don't know how?
Yes.
You get them? I have one of those right now. I have a scratch that's literally from this side of my head all the way to the other side, on my bald head. And I was like, how in the world did I do this? It's like a scratch. And Becky and I have come up with what we think is that during the night, she sliced me with her wedding ring across my head. And I'm like, wow, I thought you loved me. You're trying to give me like a frontal lobotomy in my sleep.
So it wasn't that crown you were wearing.
It was not, but I was like, when I felt it this morning, I'm like, why do I have a scratch across my head? Strange.
Well, glad you got your hat on then.
Huh? I am. 314-912-1019 is our lines to call in. Paul, before we went to break, we were talking about the Respect for Marriage Act, which it looks like it's pretty much a done deal. It will pass tomorrow. I think what got it over the finish line was a lot of people were concerned that this could lead to polygamy or other types of marriage. And I think what really put this over finish line last week is when the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, endorsed this legislation. And then Mitt Romney, he endorsed it as well. And I think that was what helped get it across the finish line.
The fact that the Mormons endorsed it?
Yeah, I really do.
So what did that enter into at all, people's concern that it would allow for polygamy?
I think, and I think because they backed that it wouldn't do that, that gave it some legitimacy.
Okay. No, you're like, I'm just saying.
Were their fingers crossed?
So I think that to a lot of senators, it gave cover. Well, hey, if the Mormon or Church of Latter-day Saints says that this will not promote polygamy, then we can go ahead and get on board.
So they didn't endorse the bill. They just said that the bill wouldn't permit
polygamy. They endorsed the bill.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
And, you know, we've talked about this many times. You know, the war of gay marriage, homosexual marriage, we've lost that war. It's legal. Now it's going to be codified into law with this. It's nothing that we can do about that. The real battle now is religious rights. And what I'm so fearful of, and Stel, you talked a little bit about this during the break, I am so fearful of what we're going to have in this country is what's happening in England and some European countries, that if a pastor or a preacher speaks against homosexuality or any other thing in the Bible,
or stands up for traditional marriage,
yeah, that the government or people are going to say that's hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where our battle now is, to protect our religious liberty so that we can practice our religion the way that we want to without the government telling us we can't. Boy, that sounds awfully familiar. Didn't we go through that already?
It's not just overseas. Go a few hundred miles north into Canada, and you've got that situation existing there. So it's spreading.
Yeah, there are preachers that have preached on traditional marriage. You know, it's right out of the first book of Genesis, and have spent a little time in jail over this kind of thing
because it's hate speech, and you're not being inclusive, and all of that nonsense.
Which is just so bizarre to me, though, because you would expect Christian people to have Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
And this is one of the mainstays of the of Christendom going back to Jesus Christ himself.
Right, right.
And before.
Right.
Right? So if this becomes one of those things that's used to, you know, hopefully not ever put somebody in jail just because they espouse a view of traditional marriage, if it comes to that in America, then I would say the bill... I feel like I can already say this. The Bill of Rights is already out the window. Yeah. So much is already out the window. But now you have different political factions weaponizing our own system against other people just because they believe different things. There's no more freedom of belief. There's no more freedom of conscience. Yeah.
And I really do think that we're going to see a court case soon. And I think this would be law if Hillary Clinton would have been elected president and she had three Supreme Court justices. This would be law, and this is what scares me in the future, is that someone is going to bring a case, and they're going to say, and it's going to be a male or female, and they're going to have two spouses, and they're going to give all the arguments that the homosexual lobby used to justify their marriage. They're going to say, look, I'm married to these two people. How does that affect your marriage? How is me married to two people? How is that affecting society? I'm not hurting anybody. I'm doing what I want to do. We're in love. Tell me how this hurts society.
Consenting adults, love is love. They'll use a lot of the exact same arguments. But here's the thing, though, Chris. Don't you think, though, that the Supreme Court, if this gets challenged, this law, congressional laws can get challenged in the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court isn't deciding based on the legislation, it's deciding based on the Constitution.
Yeah.
So when you look at Roe versus Wade being overturned, it didn't really matter that they had it codified in law or not. It came to the Supreme Court as, isn't this a state's rights issue? Yeah.
And you know, Paul, I'm glad you brought that up because I don't know the particulars. I should research it. But I heard that there were concerns that this Respect for Marriage Act could be considered unconstitutional. I don't know. Well, how do you think it could be considered unconstitutional?
I think it can absolutely be considered unconstitutional because when you look in the Constitution, and this is something, folks, you got to read the Constitution because, like, you will begin to understand. You'll begin to understand what the powers are.
Yeah.
And in Article 1, Section 8, that's where our representatives have authority over a very limited amount of issues. And everything that's not listed in that belongs to the states. And just because people back around the time of the ratification of the Constitution were just a little bit nervous that we would have mission creep in Washington, D.C., that's why they put the 9th and 10th Amendments in there, to make sure that those issues that weren't being explicitly given to the federal government belonged to the states. Well, this is one of them. There is nowhere in the Constitution we see anything about marriage. Like, not a one. And either we have to say that states do have their own individual sovereignty on issues, or they don't.
What do you think of people that some are on our side that are saying, you know what, the state or the church or the state shouldn't even be involved in this. It should be a church thing only, you know, get the state or the other way around, get the state out of marriage. What's your thoughts on that?
I'm for that too, because I don't like the idea. So what is a license? A license is when you don't have a right to do something. So you have to go get permission from somebody else.
A license
else
is
to
you
do
paid
it.
A tax.
Yeah. Yeah. You're paying a tax so you can exercise something that should have been your right to exercise in the first place. And I don't like the idea of any man or woman having to go to the government to get a license to get married. Now, we also have tax laws. Right. Whether or not you're a married couple or a single individual is going to completely change the way the government approaches you for tax purposes. But I feel like we've already gotten a lot of that cleared up through civil union laws.
Shouldn't the government have a right, or lack of, not a right's the word, but to know who are cohabitating and creating families? Does the government have an interest in that? And I'm just throwing this out. Don't hate me, folks. I'm just throwing out the question.
I'm going to go all the way back to my to my basic roots here.
Okay.
And the answer is no.
Okay.
I mean, we have a census that's constitutional because the government does have, the government has an interest in knowing how many people are in the country that the government is trying to protect, right? Or protect their freedoms or whatever. But I don't think, I don't think that the governor of Missouri or President Biden, like some of these questions on the census are incredibly intrusive. And I just don't think the government has a right to know. When it comes down to things like marriage and who's getting married, marriage is different than just a union. Marriage, like the word marriage, that is a religious institution. That's a religious institution. And so I don't like the idea of government being involved in marriage at all.
You know, my father-in-law and I were having a discussion, or he was having a discussion over the weekend. We were talking about marriage, actually, and he was asking me, where is the ceremony or marriage in the Bible? And then I was saying that there is no ceremony that you're going to find in the Bible, but the institution, that's something that God instituted between a male and a female. You leave your father, cling to your wife, you have children. I think that's there, but there's no, this is how you perform the ceremony, you're married, correct?
Yeah.
Or is there?
Not that I'm aware of, okay. But we do see in multiple places marriage ceremonies being taken place. I think of, oh man!
Jesus turned the water into wine for a marriage ceremony.
Jacob, and then he married Rebecca and all them.
That's right. So there's two marriage ceremonies right there. But at the very beginning, I mean, this was the first institution established and ordained by God, was the holy union between a man and a woman, and that's the marriage. Now, it's one thing if people say, "Hey, we want to have a civil union. We want to be looked at as a couple." Mm-hmm. For tax purposes, and we want to be seen as, but like they, you have people that are wanting to claim ownership over the word marriage, and that word itself has a certain jurisdiction just within the community of faith.
Can two people, a man and a woman, go out in the middle of the woods somewhere and proclaim their love to each other and say, under the stars and moon and nature, we are married and we pledge ourselves to each other forever? Does that constitute a quote-unquote marriage?
I think it can, for sure. I mean, when you look at old family Bibles at the very beginning, long before people were getting marriage licenses, what constituted their marriage, the record of that union, was at the very beginning, right? In that Bible, that old family Bible. You can still see these in a lot of Bibles out there today. So-and-so joined with so-and-so in a marriage. And there's a date and everything for people to sign. So I think so.
Well, hey, did I turn the show into a religious show, Stell and Paul? But pretty interesting, I thought. Hey, when we come back, we'll have more talk. We'll also have David Stokes from the Show Me Institute with us at 422. Listening to the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show on 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.